Welcome to Accounting High.
I've got the capacity to do a lot. We all do. But there's so much to do within this venture. And we got to a point within managing three other ventures simultaneously that it was a distraction to the core business that was the most profitable and that I could run the best.
So it's the entrepreneur's gift and curse, or the entrepreneur's dilemma, that you've started to solve, started to figure out as you've taken leaps along the way, right? Yeah.
May I have your attention, please?
Welcome to Accounting High. Here, we have no rules in place as we're on a mission to set our own traditions. So hang tight and learn with us as we grow. Whether you loved high school or you hated it, here's your chance to be a part of an unforgettable experience redone. So sit back, relax, and open your mind because class is in session.
I repeat, may I have your attention, please?
This is another public service announcement brought to you in part
by Accounting High.
The views and events expressed here are
of the next generation of accounting and tech professionals leading this space.
The events and suggestions are not to be taken lightly. Children should not partake in the listening
of this podcast.
Anything else?
Yeah.
So without further ado, introducing the star of our show,
Scotty and Trevor.
We're going to have a problem here.
Classes in session. We have Coach McCandless, T-Mac. What are we going to call you today? Your professor?
Ooh, sweet tea.
Sweet tea. Ooh, sweet tea from San Juan, Carolina area. Is that what you call this area in Puerto Rico? What's the
Carolina
name?
Carolina is like a little, that's a neighboring, but we're headquartered in San Juan.
San Juan. Okay. So, let's get the lay of the land here so everybody's grounded. You're not technically from San Juan. You're not from Puerto Rico. You live there, right?
Yep. We moved here about a year and a half ago. Yeah. Atlanta, Georgia. Atlanta.
A-Town.
Yeah.
For our listeners. So you moved from Atlanta. You're a CPA that moved from Atlanta to Puerto Rico. Why? Why do that?
Dude, COVID changed everything, man. You know, I'd say, was that January, February, March 2020, COVID hit. We were already remote. But since then, no clients want to meet in person. Our employees completely remote. Before COVID, we'd all go, a couple of us would go into the office, see each other, et cetera. But everybody wants to work from home. We're all over the place.
So you took a big leap. Moving your new family too. Like this is baby born in Puerto Rico?
No, she was in Atlanta. And then when she was able to fly like 6 weeks after that, she came down to Puerto Rico to meet up.
Okay. So let's rewind a little bit further back and just talk about how you got into accounting, how you became a CPA or why. Like you can start as early as high school. That's what we do here.
Yeah. Okay. Dude. So I was that guy in high school and middle school that a lot of entrepreneurs kind of have this story, right? That they were flipping soda cans and lollipops, in middle school, trying to make a dollar. That was me. And so then fast forward to like high school, everybody's trying to figure out what they want to major in and stuff like this. Well, my brother was 4 years older. He was a microbiology major and he couldn't get a job after he graduated from the University of Florida.
Microbiology.
And so he came back and lived with us. And I was like, oh, geez, I don't want to go through 4 years of college and not have a job. Right. And so my dad was like, well, accounting's pretty consistent and that jives with your entrepreneurial nature. And so I dove into that. And dude, I remember in the dorm rooms, I was that guy like freshman year, sophomore year that was recruiting other people to become accountants. I was totally bought in. Dope. I remember one of my guys across the hall from me in my dorm, his dad owned a CPA firm in Jacksonville, Florida, where I grew up. And he was studying, he was in like history and he wanted to do poli sci. I was like, what are you doing? I was like, you could just roll right into a firm after you graduate and you've got so much mentorship that you already know the business. And so he now owns a firm in Jacksonville. And so I recruited him.
So you're a natural sales, you're a natural salesman because you're convinced when you're convinced that this is the right path for you,
right?
Why wouldn't anybody else want to do it, right? Like, why wouldn't anybody else want to do this? Because it's the right move. It's the right move for me. So,
and that's passion, you know? I mean, if you have that self-belief in something, you're now passionate and you can't stop talking about it, you know? And so that's kind of been me with accounting, man. I like it, you know, I have a lot of fun doing it. And so it's kind of contagious, I think.
Contagious. So I had a friend in high school whose rap name was Contagious. That was his rap name.
I like that.
I call him Steak Sauce now, though, too, because we also called him A1. One of his screen names was A1, so I call him Steak Sauce, but Contagious.
He'd smother his steak with steak sauce.
Yes, yes. No, A1. It was just like his initials were A, so he called himself A1 on like a screen name. Okay. So then I just called him Steak Sauce instead of A1. But that's how I feel with rap stuff, man. I'm passionate about it, and I talk about it so much, and that's what you said about accounting, and that's how I still do feel that way about accounting too, but I always like to bring the rap thing in. But you've been a founder of a lot of different entities or a lot of different things. I'm on your LinkedIn and it's just founder after founder after founder, and going from founder to fusion.
Yeah.
So tell me about that journey of like starting things up or founding things, being a founder.
Whew. I'd say some of those, if you're looking at my LinkedIn, are kind of like experiments. Those were my introduction into starting businesses, right? Okay. And learning what kind of entrepreneur I am. The first company, man, this is a flashback. First company I started, I was like 2 years out of college. I was getting my master's in tax at night at Georgia State. And I was working full time at a probably 30, 40 person CPA firm. And I was kind of in that stage of entrepreneurialism, you know, you're like 23, 24 or something like this of like, what can I invest in? I was looking at franchises and stuff like this and having cool, fun discussions with my mentors at that CPA firm, being very open about like where my passions were. And I kind of saw this opportunity with renting out full sets of golf clubs to large corporate outings and put up a Google listing and a website. Nobody was doing it. Next thing you know, I'm making $30,000 a month renting golf clubs and working a full-time job and getting my master's in tax at night. That was the pre-recession of 2008. And so I actually quit that CPA firm to go full-time with this golf thing.
If you're making $30,000 a month, but why not?
Oh, dude, such an experience, man. And I like... It would golly that we could rant this whole episode just about that. But then a recession hit and I was like, I it was so weird not being in accounting because this was part of my greater vision for myself.
Sure.
And so when the recession hit, whether it was a gift or, you know, a blessing of sorts, I immediately got right back into accounting and worked at a firm for 2 years before starting Fusion thereafter. But I kind of, you know, kept that golf company rolling along, but it wasn't anything to write home about after that 2008 recession.
This is going to be an episode about pivots because we're going to talk about rebranding and building a brand and being able to pivot and having that, you know, not holding on to sunk costs too. Like I'm sure there was things about this rental that you had to let go of in order to go back. And what was it about? Okay. So the recession hits. And what was it about this business that you said, this is not going to survive this recession?
Well, it's a niche market. And so it's in the recreation industry as well. So when the recession hit, first thing to go is recreation. Large corporate golf outings where they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars for a day or two, you know. And some of our clients were big nonprofits. And so that was an interesting pivot for them, like Lowe's and Home Depot. We would do outings of theirs. But yeah, that was the main thing is that
you didn't own any of this inventory.
It was prone to, we owned it. I mean, at the outset, golly, this, again, we could talk about this.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. At the beginning, I partnered with another company out of Texas and we split profits until I could afford to buy my own sets in bulk. And we kept that relationship going for a long time and it worked. And so that strategy though of starting up and partnering with other, you know, people in your space is always kept with me, right? And it gets in even our accounting community is just brainstorming, you know, with other CPA accounting firms, et cetera.
Would you say that's the most valuable lesson you learned from that venture would be the partnerships that come out of it? Or what was the most valuable lesson you learned?
I haven't thought about that in a while. I'd say that's a big one. I've shared that story because, you know, we've had a lot of clients that are startups, right? Bootstrap startups. And I've shared that story a lot. Another lesson is I hate owning companies with inventory.
Not working with companies with inventory, just owning them yourself.
Yeah,
right?
Correct. Let's be very clear about that because we do a lot of e-commerce work.
I know.
That was another lesson learned, but I'd say those would be the top two. But partnering and thinking of creative ways how to deliver your service or your product to your end customer, huge.
Yeah. So that journey leads you back to accounting. All roads lead back to accounting for you. What was next? What was the next big founding venture?
So let's see here. So, well, then it was, I think at that time, I was still having this hat on of being the serial entrepreneur, which I'm not at all these days. These days I'm, you know, honed in on Fusion CPA, but
you're in your lane, but you're still an entrepreneur based on our conversation.
Oh, you for are sure. Still, but within one business,
okay.
You know, so back then I was still in my late 20s and I started a company selling out licensed collegiate wear, these kind of scarves of sorts that we kind of created. This is a whole nother experiment. You know, we got copyrighted products. We had licensed with major universities, but I forgot about that other rule of having inventory. So there's a lesson learned there, but I think the other major
lesson. So you got a warehouse of scarves business, somewhere.
Yeah. Well, no, we gave them away. Okay. But we had a warehouse of scarves and golf clubs at one point. But then the other lesson learned, especially it gets back to e-commerce, right, is having major distribution cycles and outlets versus, you know, we were going to, you know, college game days and selling these things, you know, by hand, which was great from a sales perspective and just, you know, one-on-one, just sharing your story and sealing deals. But it wasn't scalable whatsoever. So, lots of fun, though.
Well, that and is that what fuels the innovation too? Is the stories and talking to people and the one-on-one stuff? Is that what fuels the fire to keep going doing that? That's the impact.
You know, we're in the middle of doing our semi-annual reviews right now internally. You know, it's July, and that's a hot topic, right? Is the interpersonal relationships that we have with our clients, and it's one of the reasons of. If I say our rebrand refresh is kind of four-pronged, it's one of the major prongs is how we embrace customer service and more touch points, not less, from an individual, you know, standpoint. I think a lot of companies out there want to use technology to just replace that relationship, but I love it personally. You know, it's not for everybody, but you know, some clients, you know, as well, if they're only a small business and they might only want to have three touch points or one touch point throughout the year, that's fine. There's a place for that. But I love, you know, deep relationships with the clients that need to have this.
So tell me when the light bulb flashed and you said Fusion. Like when did the word Fusion become part of your brand? Because that's what's leading us into your current firm now is Fusion. But you had something before that, Fusion CXO.
That was a recruiting business. I forgot that was on my LinkedIn too. So recruiting has also been very big within what we do. We've got a full-time recruiter on staff as well. But yeah, Fusion, we were sitting on the porch, me and two of my first employees at Fusion CPA. And we were like, what name embraces our personalities, you know? And I was never a fan of having my name on the door and everybody wanting to just come and talk to Trevor, but that we're really a conglomerate of people and personalities and skill sets. So number one, it was just, I didn't want my name on the door. I didn't want to be the center of attention. I wanted to be a team approach. And Fusion just came to us as just kind of a word that encapsulated that.
What is it about that? Not wanting to be the center of attention, but also wanting attention? Because when you're the head of a business, there's something right there.
And I embrace leadership. I love it.
Yeah.
You know, and having fantastic teammates around me and we're all going in the same direction. We're pumped to, you know, hit each Monday. Yeah, there's something behind. There's probably some psychology.
I've been struggling with it myself. So you go from recruiting, but the fusion. So I like that. I like that story of a conglomerate, you know, and fusing all the parts together. It's a great word, and it's a great word to use as part of your brand. And obviously you took it with you. It didn't work out for recruiting, but it worked out for this firm. So you started this firm. Is this the firm? This is the one you started 12 years ago? 13?
January-ish of 2011?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
So around the same time I started at the firm I'm at, it was about 2010 for me. And at that stage right there, is it pre-cloud for you? Were you doing anything in the cloud? Were you mostly desktop-based back then when you started?
Let's see here. Good question. So no, we were a desktop, but I think QBO came out.
QBO was horrible in 2011.
Right, but it was out. Everybody was bashing it. QuickBooks desktop is still the way. But then it got better like 3 years after that, something around there. Yeah. And then it was like, great. You know, it was like, okay, there's still your people with desktop, but now there's online. We can all access it anytime, anywhere. No backup files, which is a nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't mean to dive straight into there, but I was just trying to get the lay of the land of like your mindset around that stage. So you're in Atlanta, starting this firm. What was the onset to start the firm? Finally, like after all this, you're an accountant, but you got golf clubs, scarves, and recruiting that's eventually leading to your CPA firm.
Yeah. Well, this is always the vision to have my own CPA firm. And after 6 years of working at these two CPA firms, and I wouldn't say I was working them like just any average accountant was working at these CPA firms. I was really embracing the work. Right. So I feel like even though I had 6 years experience, I might as well have had 10 because I was asking questions that were annoying the partners. Right. I'm trying to analyze these ventures or why they're profitable, why they're losing money, et cetera. But at that point, I felt like I was ready. I could solve most problems in the world of tax accounting from A to Z. And if there were some outside of my wheelhouse, like international stuff or specialty kind of work, maybe manufacturing, I just referred that out. I knew my lane and I could service my clients well there.
I had that same part of my journey where I felt like I could handle everything. I was young and I didn't realize I was on the peak of Mount Stupid till I realized how much I didn't know, till I went head first into certain things and I dove in and I said, we could handle this. We could do this. I could do this. I could handle anything. And then ended up with a lot of mud on my face down. But it wasn't until I learned that to realize how much I didn't know. And then I was hungry to learn again and went up that next hill and tried to learn and learn where other people could complement my skill sets too. Because I knew I was good with the clients. I was good with talking with people, but I wasn't very good at setting up systems. I wasn't very good at setting up a process for the firm to excel without me too.
Yeah.
So let's hear where you are with that journey too. So you've got your firm, you're just starting out. Tell me about how that went, those first early years, hiring people, building a firm.
Yeah. I was super lucky. I hired my first hire still with us today, Stephen Summers. Yeah, he is one of
great initials on that kid. Great initials on him.
You love the alliteration, don't you?
I love it. I love it.
But I got really lucky with him, right? That he's a super, super smart CPA and we jive super well together. As I said, he was my first hire, but I think very diligently, you know, constantly recruiting. One of my clients, fantastic longtime client, still a client today, told me one day that he spent 20% of each of his weeks recruiting. He was also the same client that got me into NetSuite, which is part of our vision today.
Well, that experimented with us. Excited to get there.
Yeah, golly, I hadn't thought about that in a little while. Great question, Scott.
That's what I'm full of. I'm full of it. So, as you're building out a firm and you've got this big vision to grow, what were some of the walls that you hit along the way, or some of the roadblocks to growing this? Some of the ceilings that you hit, maybe as you're starting to grow. Some of those, you know, what were some of the early lessons learned?
So even before I started the firm, I reached out to another younger CPA that was about my age and asked him, that same question. And he had, you know, one contractor and it was just him. He was maybe he did what, 120K a year. And he wasn't getting over that hump in his mind to invest full time in a staff member. And he got burned out. A couple years later, he ended up saying, Trevor, listen, I'm going to be a CFO at this other company. And I took over his small client base. But that was a big thing. He's recruiting. And so that big lesson learned based on that, that conversation and that relationship was I wanted to invest, even if I'm losing a little bit of money or breaking even for year one, maybe even year two, I'm going to put forth that money so it, I can kind of continue to grow the firm.
Invest and just in people.
Hire the people. Yeah. Yeah. So that's always been a kind of thing. It's like, even when fast forward today, in order for us to get into the NetSuite world that we're in, we had to do a significant capital investment, both in people, technology, and time. So it's, that's something that's always stuck with me is just going ahead and doing that investment. If you feel like this is your path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And seeing the vision to get past that too. A lot of people can't get past that initial phase of, okay, investing in it. I'm not going to be making that much money. So I need some runway to be able to get through that too. I need some reserves. I need to be able to uphold and maintain my own lifestyle. And this is something that I went through. Like, as I'm investing in people, investing in a management team, I lost money in a couple months and we weren't making any money as that was building up. I saw what was on the other side of it, but it's so hard to get through that, especially if you're used to everything's always profitable sometimes. Like in this kind of world, especially if you're running on your own and then you're just hiring people to handle the excess, you're never running low on margins in this kind of business.
Yeah.
You know, this guy, he probably worked himself to burnout. He didn't have anybody helping him?
He had like a contractor, you know, and he didn't commit to making this guy full time. And in my opinion, that's where the downfall was, that he just didn't make that commitment to say, I'm going to sacrifice some of my own compensation to bring on this full time. And so it's, you know, when we're talking to clients, the same thing. I like to, you know, advise and coach clients based on the experiences I went through myself. So sometimes when these investments, while they might be break even or negative cash flow for a while, in my mind, it's one hopefully short-term step back for three short to midterm steps forward, right? And so it's a little bit of sacrifice, but you got to monitor it as close as possible as far as how you're doing with that investment in that training, et cetera, as fast as possible, because it can go bad pretty quickly if you're just sleeping.
Yeah. So your foundation and your bread and butter of Fusion is taxes, small business, entrepreneurs. That's what you built it off of.
Right.
And I want to get into the NetSuite part of the conversation, because this is sort of the way I see it is it's, you're branching off two different things now. You've got your bread and butter. That's not the client base that you're going to go after on the NetSuite clients. So let's talk about, you've got this firm that's working, everything's working, and then you see this big, shiny, massive other path. So some may say you hit a fork in the road. What you say is now I can run two roads. And I'm trying to draw the right analogy, but you've got one business that's working, it's profitable, but did you not see your full vision of what you wanted to do with your firm? Did you not see that path taking you there? And NetSuite's going to be the one that gets you to your vision?
So it was always part of the vision, right? Let's call, you know, small business tax and accounting phase one of that vision. This is kind of phase two in emerging enterprise companies. Mm. So part of my vision for going back 10 years or so, he's really been to work with 50 badass professionals, whether they're accountants, CPAs, consultants, et cetera. 50 was the kind of goal, and to work on problems that matter and problems that have impact for our clients. And sometimes those companies are just bigger, right? Because they have just, they're similar problems. They're just bigger problems. I've mentioned it before. It's like, I've always looked up to McKinsey, right? And McKinsey, when they started off like in the 1920s, I think they were like McKinsey and co accountants and management engineers. That was the title of McKinsey.
100 years ago.
Right. And I think there's like a great book. It's called The Firm about McKinsey. And like 40 years into it, they dropped the accountant's role. It was very complimentary, obviously, for that part of their story. And then they're just, you know, consultants. But I love the management engineers. I love the mix of accounting with it. I don't see us dropping accounting, you know, and becoming management consultants. But I think that is where we're kind of continuing to evolve in kind of data analysis and making smart management decisions based on data-driven fundamentals.
Yeah. If you're not working with that data, and that data falls outside the realm of just accounting, and NetSuite can handle a lot of other assets of a business and facets of a business besides just what QuickBooks can do. So you saw this being a way to fulfill your full vision, because that obviously the McKinsey has impacted you. You saw what they did, and they sort of, in their journey, they shed a lot of that compliance type work and the accountant type work to go bigger. And McKinsey has built a brand around consulting. When you think consulting, you usually think McKinsey. Right. They do very well. So like, I'm starting to see your vision too. I'm starting to see where that's leading. And so you got this, you know, one few years ago, you've got this one client that's merging their platform and they're growing, and they're saying, we're going to upgrade to NetSuite. And rather than saying, great, let me find somebody to help you guys with this, you said, let's do this.
Well, they approached us, actually. They loved working with us. We were doing the tax work for them. And they had kind of, let's call it a junior controller in there. And they just wanted, number one, a second set of eyes to support him in his role. And he knew we didn't have any NetSuite experience, but he was like, hey, let's give it a try. Let's give it a go. And we're like, okay, let's learn. We could use the revenues. We love the relationship, and we get a chance to learn something new. And so we went down that road, and we also consulted with some outside consultants to help us learn a little bit. But NetSuite is of such complexity that you can't really moonlight on this platform.
No.
You can't do QuickBooks. Like, one person can't be doing QuickBooks and tax work and NetSuite. It's you're spread too thin. So we're like, okay, if we're going to go down this road, we have to invest heavily in a full-time, at least, you know, to start off, one full-time individual, invest in training. So that was kind of our peak inside of getting some hands-on. And then that light bulb started to get brighter and brighter. We started to have other clients doing the same thing. And it's like, okay, let's go full bore on this.
I almost did the same thing with Microsoft Dynamics. Same thing. We had a client come to us. They were ready to pay us like $50,000 to help with everything. This was like a year engagement. And I was like, all right, I think we can manage this. Maybe we can get some more clients on it. You know, a couple more engagements and have people working full time on it. It stalled out. We didn't even pursue it because I saw the fork in the road. I saw, okay, I'm going to have one business that has a handful of people dedicated to this enterprise product and clients there, they're working full time with them. But then I also have 100+ small businesses that we're serving that also rely on us too. What am I going to do? Take on both types of clients? So I hit that fork in the road and then I hit eject. You're pursuing it, and I find that admirable, but I also see to point down the road where you're going to have to make a decision. Are these two separate businesses? Now, they could be under the same umbrella, fuse them together with the fusion, but you're going to have to operate them as separate businesses. And I think this is the stage that you're in now with these phases, is starting to decide with this rebrand, do you rebrand the original firm fully, or do you spin off a new brand for the NetSuite clients?
And me and one of my coaches argue about this a lot. So he's kind of taking your position that this is a different brand. I'm taking the position that it's kind of two different departments, two different client bases. We have our small business foundation that we still serve, love serving. And we've got our team that really specializes and are great at it. And that's that kind of zero startup, you know, kind of business to 5 million. And then this other
zero, no pun intended, because I'm a zero guy, but we're QuickBooks here too. Yeah.
But then you've got this other client base that is 5 to 75 million. we're doing very much the same stuff for both of them. It's just specialists in the technology are a little bit different. Does that make sense?
So, well, we talk about niching a lot on the show, and we've had a lot of episodes talking about that. And in a way, NetSuite is a niche for you, because I mentioned Xero because Xero was our niche for at least, you know, you're talking about early days, 2011, 2012, when we found that QuickBooks wasn't cutting it. We went to Xero, and Xero became our niche. It wasn't an industry niche. It was just a technology vertical that we were pulling in clients just because they were using Xero. They were finding us because we were Xero advisors. I think that's going to be the same thing for you for NetSuite. You're one of the, you know, few mid-market or early market CPA firms that are using NetSuite. So people are going to find you because of that. So that's going to be a vertical or niche for you. And I think that's great. But another thing they say to build a niche is eventually you got to go real deep, real deep. And that's going to lead to, in your NetSuite world, how deep can you go if you still have your attentions diverted to, well, we still have a lot of tax and QuickBooks clients. So it's, I think you could have an umbrella under the whole thing, but you're going to need different people managing each quote unquote department in order to go deep with these clients.
Oh, and that's exactly how it is. Our controller NetSuite department, they are specifically, all they do is NetSuite.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, and so you've been hiring, you've been training, you've been building an entire structure and foundation within the firm just for the future of NetSuite. Are you still investing in the future of the tax and the small business part?
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, we've got to have 40 hours a year of CPE.
Sure.
And there's always tax law coming out. And I'm a tax guy. You know, I love tax. I think it all works together. So we're always learning. Whenever new laws are coming out, we're trying to dive into it. QuickBooks, you know, I mean, yes, we're investing in, you know, the certifications there, but I don't think you got to go crazy deep much more on QuickBooks, at least with our staff. So at least from a dollar perspective, again, you know.
Well, not the software part of QuickBooks, but it's the clients. So that client base, you probably could look at that and narrow down to which ones you want to attract on that side. I mean, I think you've even said it too. That's the smaller business that needs help with the taxes and the full service aspect of helping small businesses and an accounting firm. You know, you're at your CPA firm, you're doing their taxes, you're doing their books, you're consulting with them, you're helping them. Some may say that in and of itself could be a large business. You can continue to grow that too. And it's healthy, it's profitable, it's taking you to where you're at. I think I'm with your other coach. I'm with your coach in saying these are two separate businesses, because if you're going to rebrand that, but also market to the NetSuite clients, then who are you talking to? You're talking to two different people with one brand, right? So with your new brand, your new image, your new name, are you going to attract more of the NetSuite clients, or are you going to turn away some other potential clients too that would be a good fit for the other side of the business?
Yeah, our marketing is wholly geared towards NetSuite. You know? Yeah. That's
so all those of are the our, clients. That's all, your acquisition. You were trying to acquire NetSuite clients.
Correct. So it could be that the smaller QuickBooks one get phased out little by little. That could very well be a path, and we kind of continue to reskill, you know, some of our more nets or more of our QuickBooks oriented accountants. And we have these kind of discussions all the time, specifically when, you know, it's June, July, it's a little bit slower for tax season. Some of those individuals might not have as much work to do. And so it's like, okay, you know, at some point, you know, you're going to want to adopt and get on the NetSuite train with our other NetSuite specialists. And so it could be a phasing out approach of QuickBooks. But yeah, or, to your point, all of our conversations are around NetSuite.
Or am I looking at it wrong too? And it's an evolution for you to just go up market. And in order to go up market, you need a different tool set. You need a different set of tools. So maybe I'm looking at it as parallel, but maybe not. Maybe it's just all of those clients were with us because that was us. You reflected the clients, but you're trying to go enterprise and go up market and grow and get that 50 badass professionals stage. Mm-hmm. And in order to get there, you want to be in that upper end of the market and work with that work up market, work with larger clients, and you need a new tool set. So you're evolving as a business. Maybe it's just part of the evolution.
Well, I think it's also a combination of factors. Like 70% of the new clients that come to us, they've had some kind of significant issue within NetSuite. You know, whether it's somebody like their internal controller quitting, whether they've, you know, their current bookkeeper, maybe they were great at QuickBooks, but they've just converted to NetSuite. And so we have to help in some of that integration and implementation of going from QuickBooks to NetSuite. So it helps that we have that skill set in both. And we kind of think about the finance department for this market, this $5 to $75 million customer, as kind of like a puzzle, a five-piece puzzle. You've got your CFO, a controller, a bookkeeper, an AR person, an AP person. And whether there was turnover there, whether it was just a natural progression that the current provider or people internally just didn't want to get up to speed with NetSuite. So a lot of our clients are referred to us by other accounting firms, you know, to just say, hey, I don't want to go there. Maybe I want to just do the bookkeeping end of it. And I want to, you know, learn a little bit about NetSuite, but if y'all could be the controller team. So we're kind of running the month end close and some of the just deliverables on a weekly basis. That comes into play a lot. But yeah, we look at this finance puzzle and see where we fit in.
Yeah.
But it's good for us to have the experience in both QuickBooks and NetSuite, in my opinion.
Well, to draw a parallel, I'm going through a bit of a rebrand in the wrap phase, in the wrap arena. For the whole year last year, I went by a little toddler. That's how, when I met you, it was,
yep,
Will Toddler. That was the first thing I heard from you at Accounting Salon. And it was like, yeah. Oh, I just had to meet Little Toddler. And I love that. I love that name. I feel like I still want to keep that. That's my fusion tax. But I've gone on to OKR. I think that might be a little bit more scalable in the business world. I think I can evolve and grow. It's a word that works on multiple levels. It could work with software companies. Accountants are starting to learn OKRs. I'm just the OK rapper. But, you know, there's a play in there where I say it's part of my evolution, but I still don't want to let Little Toddler go. I still don't want to just shed it and let it go. So I still need to keep it there and say I'm still working on some raps as Little Toddler. Yep. I'm diverting my attention, and there's one that I'm working on that I started as a Little Toddler track, but it's probably going to be an OKR track, and it's called No. And it's about saying no more and knowing when to say no in business. I mean, most of my raps are about business, about accounting. And I think that's what you're going to have to learn too with this new venture or this evolution, is when you have clients that come to you that, like, they're a perfect fit for Fusion Tax, you still may have to say no to them. If you really want to evolve and eventually let that kind of live its own life until eventually, you know, like you said, you're going to upskill some of the people that you have working on those clients. Eventually, you're going to start losing some of those. And if you really want to build and you got 70% of your new clients coming to you as NetSuite, well, maybe 100% of the ones you take on should just be NetSuite as you build that. And I'm giving you advice as I'm learning too, because I'm still trying to figure this out myself, you know, maybe not for my firm, but maybe for my little rap career here. Right.
Yeah.
So tell me, what are you going to do? What are you going to say no to? Like, you got, now let's say next week you get five leads that come in the door. Two of them might be perfect Fusion Tax clients and three of them are NetSuite. How do you devote your time to those proposals and putting that together? Tell me, what would you do?
We're still going to take on all those.
All of them.
I know that might be, that might not be where
say no, your I need opinion to play this best track for you. Yeah, I need to play this.
Yeah. We might have to play this out, because we have each of these departments with dedicated staff to them. That's still, again, my foundation and our future. I'm not going to just necessarily right now throw out our foundation.
But your context shift.
I don't see that.
Your salesperson, whoever's putting together those proposals, is going to be really context shifting. You know, I got to put this one proposal together and the dollar value is going to be way different. The work's going to be different. Like, everything's going to be very different between these proposals. At some point, you're really going to have to focus.
You might be right.
As a coach,
you might be right.
As a, as somebody that I'm trying to teach myself
really
this
abide
decade.
By,
I don't abide by this. Hell no.
Or gestalt, right? You're just like, hey, man, this is what you got to do.
Well, that's how it is. I feel like but I'm also acknowledging the fact that this advice I'm giving you, I wouldn't be able to take myself. Like, and it's hard for me to do these things.
Easier said than done.
Yeah, these have been the hardest things in my journey is saying no. That's why I'm writing a song about it. I can't say no to opportunity. When somebody comes to me and says, I'm going to pay you this much to do this, all right, let's do it. And we used to say yes to everything.
No, granted, there's a boatload of things that we will say no to. Boatload. We've said, I can remember two no's earlier this week that were like, nope, we're not the right fit for you. I can send you to somebody else, but that's just not our bread and butter. Here's the thing is that like of our workforce, and we've got 22 people on my team, right? Actually, 40-45% of our team is non-billable. It's support. It's onboarding geared towards, you know, these two client bases. So it's not like our team is scrambling between a proposal on NetSuite and a proposal on QuickBooks. That's not at all the case. We've got that process down, and we've had it down for a while. So we can easily onboard both of those. And then we go right into the teams. You know, so it's not like – I don't think our attention – is distracted too much with these two client bases and how we do
them. Yeah. I think that's, and it's going to be important to continue to further define them. And again, maybe it leads to two mini brands under the one umbrella, right? But two side, like, you know, side brands parallel.
My coach Scott's going to watch this, and he's gonna be like, Trevor, that's another one for me.
Yeah. I think a lot of our audience too, is listening, and probably, you know, a lot of them could be in similar situations where they have, you know, they're trying to pick a niche. I've been trying to pick a niche for years and I can't do it. I can't commit because then I still want to work with that type of client or that. So it took me getting out of the way at the firm just for that no factor to come in. Yeah. Like my team is now handling sales. I don't do any sales anymore. So they are saying no to things I would have said yes to. I know it because I see it during our team meetings. They're going over who, like what they're not going to give a proposal to. And I said, why aren't you going to give a proposal to them? Well, they're not going to be a good fit. They're not a good fit. And they're saying no to it. They're not taking my advice of, oh, why can't you just take it on? We could use the revenue. We could do this work. I'm still on the sidelines telling them what I know they shouldn't do. But when I'm in the moment, I'm like, oh, let's take on more revenue. So I had to get out of the way for us to be able to, for them to be able to continue on my initial vision of getting more focused or, you know, my desire to get more focused. As much as I want to focus, I still divert everybody's attention into all the different arenas. So I had to get out of the way. What's your role in the firm right now? Let's divert from just the two branding things. And let's talk about your role as an owner.
Yeah. So I'm super involved. Let's see here. So we've got tax, we've got bookkeeping, we have the controller team, we have a recruiting department, and we have a marketing department. So I enjoy heavily participating in every single one. I'm still reviewing.
You're an entrepreneur.
You probably hate me. Here comes the coach here. I still review every tax return and sign off on them. I that's just part of my makeup. There's other people that they might hate actually being in this involved in each department.
It may not be hating, but it may not be hating. Yeah. It's just limiting. It's
true.
Limits what you're able to do. And it's a bit of a bottleneck too, in some ways. Right.
But I spend a significant amount of time still on the visionary work as well. So even though I might be involved in every department meeting, because we have some sub, you know, department meetings outside of the ones I'm involved with, but I like to be in on, you know, the marketing meeting. It's kind of scratching that creative itch.
You know
what I mean? Of, hey, can we do this? You know, I woke up Saturday morning and I'm like spending 4 hours on some random idea with ChatGPT. And it's like, okay, temper that down a little bit, but it scratches that itch, right?
Oh,
but
Chaz will take you down some rabbit holes.
You know, Charles, ChatGPT.
Charles GPT Senior is the 4, right? Is that the more senior level? Which one are you using? 4 or 3.5?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I saw that they took out Bing for the Mammoth, but who cares? But yeah, so even like, but I like being involved in the recruiting team meetings, right? Of who we are looking at bringing in on our next hires, you know, what we're talking to them about, what their personal vision is, which is very important. If that jives with our company's vision. And so it helps me to revisit where we're going from a company standpoint, make sure everybody in our team understands where we're going as a company. And if that aligns with their personal vision, and that you have to revisit that, you know, at least a year on a yearly basis, because whether you have a kid or you move somewhere, does your personal vision change from year to year? And it very well might. It's not like you're saying, hey, this is my vision and I'm stuck in the mud with it, you know?
Oh, no, it always evolves. Yeah, that was important. We talked about that in our PX series, the people experience, you know, keeping up with the team's vision of where they want their lives to go and how they want to evolve and how they want to contribute in the future too. And seeing, you know, what's the best seat for everybody? Where's everybody best suited?
Yeah.
To grow personally too, professionally and personally. I think that's really important to stay in touch with your team. But having your, you know, Saturday ideas with Chaz, but also being involved in all five aspects of the firm, where's your free time going? How do you have any free time?
I've got a lot. I think my free time, as I said, I'm not a serial entrepreneur anymore. Right?
Right.
Now, maybe I'm a serial entrepreneur within this umbrella, right? Within our lane of tax and accounting. But yeah, I mean, I've got a 1.5-year-old baby at home, you know, a wife. We're spending, you know, a bunch of quality family time. So if I've got
traveling
free time,
a lot too, man. I saw you.
I
never
know.
Met before this year, and I saw you 3 different times already, just in a couple months. It was great.
I know. It was phenomenal. I texted you. I was like, I miss seeing you. I was seeing you every single week. It was great.
Good to hang out now, though. This is great. I'm happy you're on the show.
But, well, it makes me want to go more conferences just to see. I mean, our accounting community is so fantastic. You know
fantastic.
What I mean? And going to the conferences and just seeing everybody's face and just kind of sharing experiences, stories, opportunities. It's the best. I think we've got such a great community.
And that's what fuels the innovation. And that's what also validates some of your own thinking. And it's not just Chaz you can bounce off of. You can bounce off of Kenji too, you know, and all of our other peers.
Right.
You know, you can have a conversation with Dave Leary about something that could bridge some other branding and marketing aspect. And like all of the ideas come together too. And you form your own fused vision of this. And you continue to evolve. Yeah. Fuse it all together. And you know, you've made a lot of intentional decisions. We didn't talk that much about just picking up and moving the family to a whole other region of the country. This is still part of the country, Puerto Rico. You know, I get confused with Costa Rica all the time. Even Juana said, oh, how's Costa Rica over there? Because I told her I was recording with you today and it's Puerto Rico. Oh yeah, Puerto Rico. So I made the same mistake. But yeah, like you're still able to do all of these things and have your hands in all of it. And is that because you've said no to the other ideas outside of accounting? You're staying focused within this one thing, and that's why you're still able to have this like complex vision of, I see the future of NetSuite, but we can still serve these. And you're doing it all because you're limiting yourself to just that one roof, that one umbrella business.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, you looked at my LinkedIn, I've got the capacity to do a lot. We all do. Right.
Scarves, so golf clubs, recruiting.
But there's so much to do within this venture. And we got to a point within, you know, managing 3 other ventures simultaneously that it was a distraction to the core business that was the most profitable and that I could run the best. So like I was a better leader to our employees and our clients if I was honing in on just this venture.
So it's the entrepreneur's gift and curse, or the entrepreneur's dilemma that you've started to solve, started to figure out as you've taken leaps along the way, right?
Yeah. I think I really shed those off in like 2018, 2019, somewhere around there. So it's been a while since I've really shed those off. And even if that was the date that I've, you know, said, hey, I'm done here with these other things, it was probably a year before that where I was actually winding them down. I don't know. That could be up for debate.
Yeah. But would you say COVID definitely helped you focus too?
Jeez,
having that, I mean, because you're not as, I think one thing that COVID did for a lot of people is they did have to focus on something because there wasn't a lot of context shifting in life. You know, we were stuck at home, or you're just planning a move to Puerto Rico.
Well, I feel like you just said COVID again. And I feel like I have PTSD from COVID.
Okay.
It was such a nightmare, you know? Quickly. Yeah. I mean, it's such a mind. No, very quickly. So, you know, COVID, that March-ish, February-March timeframe of 2020. And then we ended up moving to North Georgia, getting out of the city of Atlanta totally, like in June, July, and spending kind of part-time there. So I was mentally moving, you know what I mean? I don't know. Just the vibe changed, you know? And so then it was kind of like, where do we want to go next? You know, we're looking all up and down the East Coast. And the cool thing here is there's a lot of entrepreneurs here. There's a cool community here. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of talent here. You know, we've got a couple employees here now. We've got another employee that's actually moving from Oregon back to Puerto Rico to be closer with his family. He's a CPA, so he's got a lot of U.S. tax experience. And that's our – and QuickBooks experience. And so that'll fit nicely so our client base is.
Yeah, on half of your client base at least, or 30% eventually.
Yeah, there you go.
And – So what was it? I should have asked this in the beginning, but why Puerto Rico of all places?
Yeah. So number one, it's a total change of pace, you know, from where we're at, like with the new baby, you can kind of come down here and have less distractions. Like I had a whole bunch of happy hours that I was always going to in Atlanta, et cetera. There's been a population decline in Puerto Rico. I want to say it's like I see different stats all the time. Over the last decade, it's been like 10 to 17%. And it's probably, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. And so Puerto Rico about a decade ago created a tax incentive for if people move down here, you know, started a company down here, hire individuals, you know, there's all kinds of rules and regulations about buy it, you know, got to buy a home within 2 years, et cetera, that they have a tax rate of 4% for corporate earnings. And so, you know, I'm a tax guy.
That was part of the incentive to move.
That's part of it. Yeah. But, you know, also in looking at just home prices along the East Coast, when we were thinking about doing this move back in 2021, you know, the housing prices, you would get a fixer upper for $1.5 million.
Yeah.
I was looking in Raleigh, you know, I looked in Raleigh, you know, in Knoxville, Tennessee, just, you know, in Maine, we were looking everywhere, man. And so we were able to buy this house with very much within our budget, with little renovations. And so, you know, it's cool there. You know, my parents met in Puerto Rico, years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Puerto Rico's always had like a special place in our family's heart, you know? And we had vacationed down here before. It's a chill vibe, man. I grew up in Jacksonville, Florida by the beach. And so this, like, you know, I was landlocked in Atlanta. I hadn't, you know, been around the ocean very much. And so, you know, part of, you know, when I'm able to get in touch with my personal vision sharing, et cetera, a half day on Friday, like I've got some friends in town today that we're going to go to the beach after this and kind of relax, you know? I mean, I've always been an ocean guy. You probably see a sailboat in the background here. I used to race sailboats in high school. And so, you know, I'm a water guy. And so it all works together, man.
Well, last thing is your bobblehead and EO. So entrepreneurs, organization, is that EO? You're part of EO. When did you join EO?
You know what? That same client who got me into NetSuite and told me about 20% recruiting each week got me into, he's the one who started telling me about EO. And so, golly, that must have been probably 6-7 years ago. And for EO, if for those who don't know, EO is a phenomenal organization, just peers in different industries, experience sharing, you know, you got to be the founder of your company and gross over $1 million.
Kenji attributes a lot of his journey to EO. I have a client that just sold her business and she attributes all of it to EO. A lot of people have sworn by it.
And it's a global organization. Like I've gone to the global conferences in Germany. We've gone to trips to Portugal to meet with EOers, Mexico, all over the place. And so I'm a member here in the EO chapter in Puerto Rico, which is phenomenal. It helps us integrate with the island and wrap with other entrepreneurs locally. I mean, it's
we're all running global entrepreneurs locally. Yeah. I love it.
And we're all running theoretically global businesses. You know, as I said, we've got a global workforce. We're talking to kids out of University of Puerto Rico, and when we're talking to them about, have you ever worked with or thought about working with, you know, people out of Macedonia or the Philippines? It's like, what? Y'all, we could do that with you? I'm like, absolutely. This is how, you know, successful businesses are run these days. And so it's a cool selling point for from that perspective.
Well, for accountants, you learn how to run a business like a business and not like an accountant. And I think that's the value that Kenji got out of it for sure, because they are running their firm like it's a business. And it sounds like that's what you're doing too.
Well, it's the experience sharing that we all get in that organization. We could talk, that could be a whole nother episode just about EO, but they gave me the bobblehead episodes too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I got the bobblehead beat on the board in Atlanta that year. But yeah, it's a phenomenal organization. I'd say whoever's listening, definitely check it out in your vicinity. You'd get a boatload out of it.
Well, you've got the personality that deserves a bobblehead. I had one when we were Sons of CPAs. I had my own little like cartoon bobblehead version of me that I was rolling around. I think you could see it on this mic if I pull it far enough. But that was our own little logo. If you look up, try to find the old Sons of CPAs logos. But yeah. I love the bobbleheads. I love the pop figures. I love all that stuff. But thanks for coming on, homie. I really enjoyed this. I think we learned a lot about, you know, being intentional with your pivots, being intentional with your business. But the entrepreneur's gift and curse is we have so many ideas. We have so much we want to do. We have so much we want to give to the world, but we only have so much time. We're limited. We have a lot of limiting factors and we can't do it all. I mean, I'm very interested to hear where your vision takes you and where you end up with this NetSuite thing. So we'll be checking in again, maybe junior year. This is early sophomore year at Accounting High. So we'll see where you end up junior year. Do you have any parting wisdom to give our students?
If I'm thinking about who a lot of our listeners might be, other accountants, obviously, you know, whether you're a staff accountant or an owner of a small firm, I think just reconnecting with your personal vision, I think is probably one of the best things that you could do for yourself to make sure that you're grounded on where you're going to go, because there's a boatload of ups and downs in this path, you know, and as long as we've kind of got that greater goal that we're working on, it helps us get through those downtimes, you know, whether it's employee problems, client problems, whatever it is, that'd be probably my parting words.
And the best way to navigate those boatloads of ups and downs is to not be landlocked and have a sea of opportunity, right?
There you go. Keeping it all connected, Scott.
Peace out, homies. Class dismissed.
While you're here, don't forget to follow us on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you may be listening to us right now so you don't miss out on any new episodes. And feel free to leave us a 5-star review letting us know how the school year is treating you. In addition, share this episode on social media, tagging us at Accounting High,